Hi, I'm Greg Greenfell.
And I'm Libby Fulton. And
we like to garden.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're both COVID free.
We are.
Sorry to taunt people with us. Status.
I know. There's a few people at work that have it, but I feel like I'm not surrounded by it. So I'm not surprised that I don't have it.
I feel the net of people that I know is closing in on me that have tested positive.
The net of people is closing in on you.
So I can't avoid it for much longer, I don't think.
I don't know. I just don't feel like it's that close to me.
It must be nice.
Time will tell. Maybe I've already got it. Who really knows?
Who knows?
Anyway, first of all, thanks to everyone who entered the Secret Gardens giveaway that we did on our Instagram last week. Yep. It was so cool to just be able to give that away.
It was a great experience. We were excited to do it.
Yeah, so excited for other people to just be able to go there.
An experience. Experience Wrentham. And would love to actually know what they thought. Is that too much?
Actually, yeah. Maybe we'll message them.
I just thought of it.
Yeah. I did see awesome feedback posted on the Secret Gardens page from the day. So I would definitely say go to Margaret's next two workshops and, if you can.
And is she doing something specific with those ones over winter?
Yes. So they are one. The first one is, I think, a winter work. And it's, I think, all about, the kind of work that, the winter work. Because
you're overselling this. Just stop. You've told me too much already.
What an idiot. So, because if you're a gardener, you know that winter's actually a super busy time in the garden.
Such a busy
and
time.
Everything you're doing is prepping for the next season. So you're getting the best season that you can in the spring, summer. So I think that's just all about the kind of stuff that she does over winter. And then the other one is going to be on plants for dry and shady places, which is something that I know lots of people struggle with.
I'm actually, I'm going to look into that because I would love to attend.
Yeah, I actually would really, I just like to hear her talk, but yeah, I might go to one of them. So the winter work one is in June, and the dry shady one is in 4th of November.
Oh, so far to wait.
That is real far to wait. But yeah, so that was awesome that we were able to give some tickets away. And
so exciting.
Yeah, so.
And we had people to give it away to.
The most shocking part of all. Yeah. But on with the show.
On with the show.
On with the show. So follow us on Instagram, We Like to Garden, and join our Facebook group, We Like to Garden.
And hopefully we have more giveaways, but, we don't want to overpromise and under-deliver.
No, definitely don't. Yeah, tune in for a giveaway every week. So, Libby, what have you been up to in the garden?
I'm so excited. It's the first time I've been able to really think about planning my new garden, and I'm going to have so much space that I've been researching a lot of different whimsical annuals to put in the new garden. Yes.
Beautiful.
Because my old garden was full of a lot of perennials, a lot of trees, a lot of shrubs, some roses. Yeah. It didn't have the space. I wasn't prepared to cut out a lot of things that would take away from the privacy and
screening. And it was already, it's hard moving into, to already an established garden. When you moved in there, it would have been quite established. And then now you've got a brand new garden that's just got baby, you've got some shrubs and stuff in your new garden, but they're all little babies.
Yes. So I will have to work with, I think, the elements. I think the wind's going to be a big issue, but I'm excited. So I've bought some annuals from Emmerdon Seeds and Bulbs, which is they grow them in Tikarangi in out of Taranaki somewhere. Yeah. And I found them on Instagram, just researching beautiful seeds and things. And I'm so excited. I went to town.
So do they have quite like cool different stuff?
Really cool different stuff.
I'm going to look them up because that is a struggle that I have.
Yes. And I'm new to purchasing like specific seeds like online. So for me, because I haven't done that before. So I'm interested to see how it will go and how they germinate and how much trouble I'm going to have with them or not. But I'm here to give it a go. Yeah. So I got some statuses, like a yellow, like which is – so when I looked at my cart, it wasn't the colour scheme that you would have imagined, but it's like white and pink. And I was saying to Greer a while ago, when I looked at it, I was like, it's taking me back to when we visited Flaxmere. And one of the garden scenes that we went to, which was in a circular shape with segments with these wee paths, and each of the segments kind of had those like different color schemes, but overall it had these
the rose garden.
These like it just was like beautiful colors of pinks and whites and things, and I just loved it. And it had like some real hot like darker pinks thrown in there with. And so it just reminds me of that. And so I was like, actually, I'm just going to go with it. And so I've got a salmon-coloured scabiosa.
Nice.
And I bought three cosmos because would you believe it, I have not grown cosmos myself since I was a kid. I've had none in my garden.
Gosh.
I know. So I'm excited. I got a white one and two pink ones of varying colours. But the white one, I've never seen it. And I don't think you have it. It's called Pop Socks White, and it's got
never
like
heard of it.
So it's like the center, instead of being that standard yellow, it's like a frilly, almost like mini, almost looks like a scabiosa actually, is like being tucked in the middle of the cosmos, standard cosmos.
Oh, wow.
It looks so cool. I'm excited about that.
I'm gonna get onto these people, even flower seeds.
Yes, in the show notes I tagged it at the bottom. And just some Amy Major as well.
Oh, so beautiful.
It's a frothy, whitey green. So
yeah,
I'm excited. And I think eventually, depending on how that goes, it's a good starting point of inspiration for me for how and what else I can add into it to give it some more structure as well.
Yeah.
Centering around the pinky whites, which, yeah. I'm so excited. So girly. Wait. So me.
Yes.
And then boring side but actually fun, I bought some Korokia hedging plants, bunnies, discounted.
Nice.
And I don't even know where I'm going to put them, but I know that I've got a lot of work to go. So I was like, I just need to start getting these things.
You just need to start buying them and then they'll find their own place in time.
Yes. I know. So, and I think you're going to talk about that. It's such a great time to start like looking for those bargains.
I'm excited about bargains.
I know. And I also ordered some really jazzy standard daffodils. Some
jazzy daffodils.
Straight yellow trumpets from my daughter's primary school was doing a fundraiser. So I was excited. The first bulbs I bought this season.
Nice. Are you going to buy any more?
Yes, that's on my to-do list. I'm going to
We'll talk about that. Okay, cool.
So
you've been busy girl.
I know. So that's the start of, what I've been starting
to. I'm so excited to
source and research, yes.
Yes, and I'm so pumped to just be with you on your journey of like your new garden.
I know. I know, me too.
I feel like I'm just going to live vicariously through you.
I hope you'll help me.
I'll be there.
You'll either be reining me in or like, you need to think bigger. What are you doing?
Yeah, I feel like I'll be making you think bigger.
Yeah.
But like more is more.
More is more, mother.
I'll be out there digging up your lawn, digging in some new garden beds.
Oh, please do. So that's me. What have you been up to now, Greer?
I haven't been up too much. I just sowed some more veggies. I sowed some leeks.
I haven't been doing much. You always say this and you're always so productive.
Well, I feel like I haven't been doing hard work in the garden. Do you know what I mean? Like I've just been like little pottering jobs. Like I sowed some leeks, shallots, broccoli and poppies.
Ah, the poppies. And, what poppies?
So mine were from Susie Rippling last year. Susie Ripley.
Ripley. Yes.
Either or. Ripley. I'm pretty sure it's Ripley.
Believe it or not.
Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, I got one from her. I got a packet from her last year, which was called Amazing Grey. And they are shades of kind of almost a dove grey.
Oh, imagine stop. That. Yes.
Amazing Grey is essentially yes. So I've sowed those, which some of them have already germinated, is really good. So I don't know. I bought a few because she sells quite different things as well, like different shades of things. And I did buy a few different packets of hers. And I don't know if I was sowing things wrong, but I did not have much stuff come up. And also, you know, usually you buy a seed packet and there's like 200 seeds in there. There's like 20 seeds in her packets.
Oh, so you can't, there's no room for error.
No. And so I don't know if I would buy them again, but I mean, each to their own. She does have gorgeous varieties.
Yes.
Stuff that you can't just get like at King's or Egmont's or whatever, which I loved. And it's where I got my Verbena Bonariensis, and I could not find that anywhere else. So thank you, Susie. But
yes. Okay.
Yeah. I appreciate it for the time that I had it and what I had, but I will possibly try some. Nah, I probably won't buy anything from her this year, but I did buy last night. I bought another poppy. No. Yes, I bought a white poppy.
Mm. Oh.
And I bought
an Icelandic one. I do love
those. It's not, but they are gorgeous. I can't remember what it's called. But, and then I got an echinacea seeds as well. I got the green twister echinacea seeds, and that's like a hot pink in the middle and then a lime green on the end or the other way around.
I definitely am interested in that. I love that. Yeah. I think flower seeds just can have a difficult time breaking the dormancy off them to germinate. And I think that's, but
yeah, and in saying that, like, I've put my poppies in from her and they've seemed to be germinating fine. So maybe I was doing something wrong. I don't know.
No, I feel like I've had mixed success just with Yates seeds. So
yeah, that's a real heartbreak. And the other thing, it's not my garden, but last week I went to Birch Hill Flower Farm in Okuku, which is north of Christchurch. It was about like maybe 40 minutes north, and to a bouquet making workshop. And it was through Secret Gardens. So I'm pretty sure you can only go to Birch Hill Flower Farm if you book through Secret Gardens. And Nikki, who owns it, runs this workshop where she gives you a tour of her garden and then the flower farm, and then shows you, like, gives you like a demonstration on how she makes her bouquets. And then you just get a bucket and you just go crazy in her flower farm and then you make your own. And it was so good. Like, I knew that I would enjoy it, but I enjoyed it so much, even more than I thought I would enjoy it.
Oh, I'm so jealous that I didn't get to go.
It was so cool. I 100% would do it again.
I'm going to. And I want to do it in a way that I know that I can go kid-free and enjoy my day and really experience.
I know,
to
because
the
whole thing was, there was maybe 8 of us there at the workshop. And the whole thing, like arrived, and she had this really cute setup. She had like a little, she had a marquee kind of up and then a work table with chairs around it underneath. And then, so it was like nice and shady. It was protection from the sun because it was quite sunny that day. And then she had little flower arrangements all around and little
vases
and stuff
that
she made. And then there was a whole side table that had like tea, coffee, juice, water, like a full on like charcuterie board, like cupcakes. It was so legit, incredible. She did such a good job. And it was heaps of cute little touches like that that just was amazing, and everyone else was there because they also were like loving the experience. And you obviously book it because it's not super cheap; it's $90, but
it sounds like value for
the
money.
The whole experience, yeah. Exactly, and the arrangement that I came home with, I reckon would cost like $150 at a florist.
Greer sent me a photo; it was absolutely fab.
Yeah, I think I posted a reel on the Instagram afterwards. And it lasted literally, I just threw it out today. So what's that, nearly 2 weeks. Oh. It was so cool.
And as
I highly recommend.
And as you said, it was an experience, and the things that you learned, you'll use for a long time after.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like she – there's like all these, she puts heaps of herbs in her arrangements. Oh. She said she loves the freshness of them. And there's some of them that like last really well. Like there was an apple mint and a lemon balm and a lemon basil because that had cool flower spikes on it. And she grows, like she has literally like 4 baby gum trees,
yes,
that she cuts down completely, or not completely, but cuts them down really hard at the end of the season so they don't turn into big gum trees. And then she just, so they bush out heaps in spring and summer, and she cuts them for the foliage.
I've always wondered about that.
Because
You can see on certain eucalyptus trees at the base, like the pretty small, like silver dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a great tip.
Yeah, so no, it was highly recommended. So it wasn't in my garden, but I did spend the day in someone else's garden, so that was nice.
Can I just say your pronunciation of charcuterie board was like poetry to my ears.
Oh, my God. How did I say it?
I don't know, but it just sounded perfect. I can't stop thinking about it. It's like replaying backwards in my mind.
I feel like I'm too nervous to say it again in case I don't say it. It's good. Okay.
Don't,
I'm going to leave it.
Leave the magic as it is.
Yep. I'm not gonna ruin that for anyone. Yeah. okay. And quickly we'll talk about what we're going to. So we've talked about what we're going to do, and this is a new segment that we're gonna do every episode, just so that it's kind of like looking ahead and might give other people ideas, hopefully, about things they can do in their own garden. Yes. So Libby, what are you going to be doing?
My two main things that I really want to get on top of is planning and researching about my veggie garden, of what I think I'm going to grow and how big of a space I will need for what I want to grow, and how much potentially it's going to cost to mulch it and bits and pieces like that.
Yeah.
And the plants.
You know what we should do when you move into your new place is we should get a can of spray paint and some kind of level measuring tool. I'm sure Jack will have something. And we'll go and like spray out where you want your beds to be. And then you can sit with it for a few weeks, see how it looks.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I thought, I was like, I'm going to have to do, I thought about a spray can and I thought about string and things like that, but that sounds really good, like doing them all at the same time so that you can see the space. Yes. Because I don't want to muck it up either.
Yes.
I am never being known, of course. I wouldn't do anything slap bang or really haphazard.
I'll bring Jack with me and he'll keep us level and measured.
Yes. Also, I need to order some bulbs. That is on my to-do list.
Yeah.
So I think in my pots this year, I want to go with a really simple colour scheme. Usually I'm all over the shop with my ideas. So I want to do full pots like Klaus on Instagram. I'll have to put his handle up. He's the Dutch gardener that I love.
He does great pots.
He does great.
He has a forklift just to move his pots around because he has so many of them.
Yeah, that's a top tip.
If you've got thousands of pots,
he changes his pot like seasonally and during the season. He often does like an early spring display, a late spring, a summer. Yeah. So I get it. He needs that. But he's really good at doing something en masse that looks amazing. So that's what I'm thinking of doing. And I'm still going to go with my ranunculus. Third year. Still
giving them a go.
Yeah. I got some books out in the library, and it had a great tip about pre-treatment of the ranunculus bulb. So I'm going to do that this year.
I couldn't be bothered pre-treating a bulb.
I'm determined to just
put it in the ground.
I know.
How have ranunculus survived as a species?
I don't know, but I am determined. Like, I will do it just this once. If they grow, I'll be happy, and I probably will never grow them again.
Yeah.
Because last year I followed all the advice and I did not get one. But instead of soaking for 2 hours, their advice is to soak for 12 hours in cold water, in a bucket of cold water, and then lay them in a tray with a damp soil over the top and put them in like a linen closet, or like if you've got a glass house that can keep them sort of warm, mm-hmm. which I don't, and do that for 2 weeks till they actually sprout.
Oh, and my God, bothered.
And then they want to be baby Greer. They want a mother to baby them.
I do not have the patience for that. I feel like a bulb should just go in a pot and then be happy.
It should, but I'm determined.
Oh, God. They
are going to work for me this year.
Wow, I hope you do. I hope they do flourish for you, because, God, how could they not with all that care?
I know. And I also would like one of those post-digging tools. So,
what's a post-digging tool?
I've seen them in the Raised Row Gardening book that I've looked at. And now that I think about it, I've seen them on Instagram. Heaps of the gardeners use them. And you will exactly know. It's like a long spade, like handle like a spade, but the bottom of it is like two big jaws. Actually, do you know what it's like? It's like the beak of when you get a smear.
It's like a speculum.
Yeah, like a speculum. It's like a clamp that opens and it goes into the ground, and then it like extracts the dirt between its beak and then like takes it away and leaves you with a perfect hole to put your post in.
Oh.
But you use it in the garden for putting also your plants. So you can do bulk laying of your hedging plants and things like that without having to.
Yeah.
And it just must have a handle that when you put and it like a lever.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I would like. I need to do some research to find one.
Cool.
And what have you been thinking about? What's your next steps, Greer? What are you going to get up to?
My next steps will be transplanting winter veg seedlings.
How are they going?
To the garden. They're all going really well. I need to do the onions this weekend. And then I think next weekend the broccoli and leeks and shallots, and that will be ready to go as well. So I'll be doing that over the next couple of weeks, getting things in the ground or the garden anyway. And then I'm going to plant some bulbs. I have not bought many bulbs, and I don't plan on buying many bulbs this year. I just bought some hyacinths and some freesias that I'll be putting in pots. And I think I know that I'll bring the hyacinths inside to flower early, because I don't know if I've ever smelt a hyacinth, but everyone says they smell great. So and I think lots of people in the UK that I've seen anyway, the garden influencers that I follow, they bring their hyacinths inside. It's kind of like, hey, bring like daffodils inside to flower or early or whatever.
They smell so strong, Greer.
Oh, my God, I'm excited.
To the point I've had to remove mine from a room before.
Oh, my God. You're so dramatic.
I am not. I cannot wait for you to be like, you were right. They are so strong smelling.
Oh, wow. Okay. Maybe I'll just put them by the front door if they get too crazy. But, yeah. And the other thing I'm really looking forward to, which I've started saving my pennies. Actually, I haven't saved any pennies, but I will, is garden sales at Easter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to that.
Get all the garden centres, I'm pretty sure all of them are open Easter weekend, even when everything else is closed, they are still open, and they have big sales on Easter, and they have really cheap, like, end of season kind of perennials. Like, we went last year, Libby and I, and we bought so much stuff.
I kept some of mine, are still going. I kept them from last year, and then I dug them back out of my garden.
Oh, nice.
And they're still going in pots.
Yeah. Yeah. So get yourself a bargain, and yeah, really good. Love it.
Love some shopping time.
And we'll quickly move on. So what is a plant that you're looking to buy?
So I went to the library, as I was saying, and I got some great inspiration from this book called In Bloom. And it's by Claire Nolan, and it talks about great flowers for floral bouquets and things, and great tips on growing them and doing the bouquets. And I've never grown Nigella, and I really want some Love in the Mist. And I looked online, and you can get it anywhere. I thought it was going to be like a hard to find seed.
Oh,
I don't know. It's literally, you can get it Bunnings, it's by Ms. Bothergill's, Yates Stewart. So it must be a great one that it's, it says it's super hardy, easy to grow. Because in the book she talks about floral fillers. So they're the flowers in the garden and in your bouquets that bridge the gap between like a primary and a secondary display.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need flowers like that in my garden. Like, not everything has to be a showstopper.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, such a good tip.
I know, and they look so cool. They've got like a fern, like frothy foliage, and then really small, beautiful white and blue flowers that stand out. So I'm excited about that. So I haven't actually got it, so I need to find some. And I like the idea that they're hardy, so you can start sowing them now.
Yeah, nice.
And direct sow them.
Yeah.
So what about you?
I am going to buy some called Verbascum Southern Charm. And it's sold out of King Seeds online, which is really annoying. And a quick Google didn't show me anywhere else that stocked it.
So it's not at Bunnings.
Nothing came up when I Googled it. So I don't know. I might just keep an eye on King Seeds.
Okay.
I saw it at Birch Hill, and I have never seen a Verbascum before, I don't think I've ever heard of it.
I haven't. I've actually assumed it was, you were talking about a verbena.
No, very different from a verbena. It's a perennial, and it is so gorgeous. So it has flowers on quite a long spike, almost kind of like a larkspur-ish, but not. And then the flowers on this one, Southern Charm, are all kind of muted, dusky pinks, yellowy creams and purples, and it's a hardy perennial. And so I really, really, really want it. If anyone knows of the Verbascum Southern Charm and knows where I can get it, that's not King Seeds that sold out, let me know. I'll put the link for the King Seeds page in the show notes if people are interested in it. Hopefully it's restocked soon, but I don't know.
I've just found an image for it from Gardenia Net, so that must be an international, which is no help for you.
No.
Gardeners World, all over it, Greer.
Are they? Monty Wood.
Monty gets it. You're Monty. You think a lot alike.
Oh, my God, stop it.
Guys are on the same wavelength.
Do you know, on his Instagram the other day, he posted a photo of his grandson helping him in the potting shed. And I was so jealous of that baby. I was like, I wish Monty was my granddad.
Oh, my God.
Like, I just want him to be my granddad, and I just want to help him in the potting shed.
Oh, puppy.
We will move on. So our main topic for today.
Yeah, exciting.
Which is no dig.
And I didn't realize that no dig literally meant no dig.
The name is in the title.
I mean
dig a little bit?
Yes, and I thought it meant don't use a large rotary hoe blade and only till to a certain level. And I was thinking way too much like the arable industry, which still plows up a whole paddock and talk about how not to do it to basically damage your soil. Only on
a commercial level?
I don't know what I was thinking. I'm so behind the times. Okay,
we'll get into it. So the idea behind the no-dig method is that the soil has a structure and a framework that is made up of all different soil types, and there's all these different microorganisms that live and eat and live their lives in the soil. And then so you've got most of them, like the microorganisms and the insects, they live in the top layer of the soil, and they create little homes and habitats with like all these tunnels and everything.
Air pockets,
yeah, and the top of that top layer of the soil. And so when you dig over soil, it disturbs it, and then you end up turning it over and putting all of these insects and microorganisms into the next layer of soil, which isn't their natural where they should be, where they're designed to live. So it kind of fucks everything up.
And you're bringing up things from the secondary layer that don't want to be in the top layer.
Yes, yeah. So you're just basically like making it not as healthy as it could be. And most of what I've got today from my research was from Charles Dowding's website, and his website is in the show notes. He is kind of, he didn't invent it, but he's been doing it since the 80s, and he's kind of pioneered it and brought it mainstream. I guess maybe collected all the ideas and put them all together.
Yeah.
But he's been doing it for bloody ages, and he swears by it, and his garden looks pretty productive.
Yeah, you can see when you look at his website, you can see how productive it is. Like, yeah, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
So there's like major benefits for doing no dig, as I learned.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I had no idea how, which makes sense. So if you're not disturbing the soil, you're leaving the soil intact. You're literally only removing the area where you're going to plant your plant as well. So you've got less weeds because you're not disturbing the soil. So any other seeds that have been dispersed by the wind that are laying on that top of top layer of the ground, you're not going to turn them, by turning the soil over, you're not putting them in back into the soil for them to grow. It's less time consuming and effort needed than traditional tilled gardens, because it's like constant work, because you have to till them, prep the garden bed, you've got to buy soil. It's just a lot of work. Yeah. And then throughout the season, you're constantly going and tilling and weeding your rows in amongst between your plants, because that's bare dirt that's exposed. And it's less costly than doing like raised garden beds, because even though they're cute, they cost money, and you've got to choose your materials, and you've got to constantly put in mulch and compost. And
yeah, building raised beds is expensive.
And also traditional garden beds, you have to like water them so much more, because you're thinking about the runoff. And if you have got really overworked your soil, it can become like clay and really hard that you've got runoff, rather than having a no-dig situation where the water naturally is retained within the channels and air pockets, so it's going to maximize uptake into the root systems of your plants. So you need to water your plants way less.
Yeah, and I would say that, so the probably starting out a no-dig bed is quite hard. It's like quite time-consuming because, well, we'll get into it, but starting out a no-dig bed, I reckon it would be more effort than a raised garden bed. But the payoff and the like time that you get back in maintenance probably evens out, do you reckon?
Yes. And I think the first year of making it is going to be your hardest year of outlay and effort. But following seasons, you will have to do less and less. Whereas with a traditional garden bed or a raised garden bed, you're going to have to constantly either plow it over, till it up, you know, rake it, aerate it, or add materials into your raised garden bed.
So to start a no-dig bed, you can use any point in your garden. You can just make sure it's getting good sunlight. Basically, you can use lawn, you can use any dirt that you have, even if it's already got plants over it.
This fact blew my mind.
Yeah. So you don't have to dig anything up to get rid of anything, because you do that. Well, I'll tell you how you do that. But before I go on, so Charles Dowding has really good pictures and guides on his website, and he's got like good comparison pictures and stuff of like no dig beds versus traditional beds, and yeah, it's really helpful. So first you need to lay down something to kill the weeds, and it's recommended that you don't use any sprays or anything like that. So it's just either like black polyurethane or cardboard. And if you have really persistent weeds, like grass can be super annoying to get rid of. Mm. So they recommend if you're putting it on grass, then you lay down the old carpet or the plastic, like the black polyurethane, and peg it down and leave it for 6 months. And then pull it up and then put down the cardboard. So depending on what you're working with, if you're going with a straight dirt and it's not a grass that you're trying to do it on, then just go with the cardboard. If it's on lawn, he recommends, yeah, doing the plastic and then the cardboard after 6 months.
I think that's going to be me.
Yeah, because grass is so hard to get rid of.
Okay,
it's just like keeps going for it, which is crazy because you end up killing it in summer without even trying. But anyway. So first you've wet the cardboard once you put it down, and it decomposes quicker. And then you do a layer of compost. And so he is English, and when they say they plant everything straight into compost, whereas I know. Here in New Zealand we wouldn't plant things into compost because I was told that it's like too harsh on the plants and it kind of like burns them.
Yes, too nutrient dense almost.
Yeah, so I don't know about this. But so when he says compost, I don't know if he means like a potting mix style soil, something that's very nutrient rich.
Yes.
So either compost or just growing soil. So you want at least 8 centimetres on top of the cardboard. And then you follow it by with a layer of mulch, and you can use anything brown that you kind of have around, like kind of barky stuff or even like leaf mold. If you collect your leaves this winter, you could do that in spring once they've been sitting around. And then you do another layer of soil, and the bed should be about 20 centimetres deep by the end of it. Mm. So,
which is quite important.
Yes. So if you're doing it on the ground, it can be hard to keep all that stuff in.
Yes.
So when he starts a bed, he puts just pieces of wood around the outside, like planks or whatever. I think he had old railway sleepers, but they weren't a permanent part of the bed. They were just for the first year once the soil really got its structure going. Mm. And then he takes them away. So they're just a raised row. Mm. So you could put things around it that keep the soil in for that first year, but you don't have to like hammer and nail anything in. You can just kind of place things around just to keep the bulk of it in. And then, yeah, after that, the soil should be working the way that it's supposed to be. And he actually recommends that you don't permanently put surrounds around the bed, because that it just makes more homes for snails and slugs, because they like that kind of like cool dark place and they really rest up against it. Yeah. Mm. He doesn't recommend buying topsoil, because he said that the process it goes through means that a lot of microorganisms are killed.
Which makes sense.
Yeah, I guess the way it's treated.
Yeah, so, and graded sometimes.
Yeah, so I just would be careful about the type of soil that you're buying or putting on. Maybe if you're adding, you could probably do maybe like a half soil, half compost mix, or just making sure that it's like very nutrient rich. And then he said that firm soil is, so with no dig, the soil gets really firm. And he says that it's actually really good, and root vegetables will still grow really well in the soil, and that it should be really firm and have the proper structure to it in a no-dig bed. And then on his website, he's got pictures of parsnips that are grown in a really heavy clay no-dig bed, and all of the parsnips were like rod straight. And because you think, you know, with those root vegetables, they often will grow with like a curve in them where they have to grow around something, or they'll get really stubby. But he said that, yeah, and the pictures don't lie, I don't think, unless the whole thing is a scam, but I don't think it is.
No, and it's such a different mindset from traditional like vegetable garden beds where you're hoeing and you're breaking up the soil and loosening it up to provide air, or what you think is, and to get rid of your weeds, and you're constantly overworking it. So you don't need to really do that at all.
Yeah, really interesting.
We can leave it compact.
Yeah, it's one of the things you read about and you're like, oh, I don't know about this, but just have a look on his website and I feel like it speaks for itself.
Mm. And I looked at raised row gardening, which is the exact same principle as what Greer was talking about, is no dig, but it's sort of streamlined by another UK couple, Jim and Mary Compitti, and they have a book and a website called Old World Gardening, and they have heaps of great information about how it's quite basic compared to what we sort of learn from No Dig. They really lay it out in layman's terms, and how they describe their raised row is the same as Greer's, but they specify the garden into three zones. So they have a walking zone, which is the complete perimeter around your whole garden where you're going to put your rows in, and it's just where you walk. So you never plant in these zones. It's just the walking between your rows and the whole perimeter outside.
Mm-hmm.
And you mulch those. So you choose like real cost effective or whatever aesthetically you would like your walking zone to look like. So you could put gravel, which is probably more expensive, chip, but even just straw, bark.
Yeah.
You can put the cardboard to start to break it down, even leaves. Yeah, anything cheap, grass clippings, any mulch that you've got that you can think of that can easily be used to suppress the weeds. But that's just where you walk. And then you outline what they call the growing zone. So in the growing zones, they're done the exact same way as the no dig by, I think you talked about like putting the wood to hold it up, because I think it's just makes them more of a mound in the
– yeah.
So it's an extra layer. So after you've done the mulch of making it up to like 20 centimetres, which Greer was talking about, no good dig, they then add more to their row for when they plant, if that makes sense. So down the centre, you're going to add an extra layer of compost. So in the growing zone, that area, using the same mulches that Greer talked about, but you might use things that aren't as expensive. And then in your literal, they talk about the planting zone itself, which is just a tiny strip where you're going to put your plants in. You use your mulch or compost that is of the highest quality, so the most money you literally put in just that area, not in the whole of the growing zone. So you really make it specific just in the hole where you're going to put the plants.
Yeah.
And they talk the same about planting it directly in it. And I was like, what is this? But I think you're right. It's like a type of potting mix or
compost. Because on Gardener's World, they're always like, get your compost. And I'm like, I don't think that you should be putting a little seedling in there. I was told it would get really burnt.
Like, I don't know.
They obviously know what they're doing, but I just wonder if it's like been lost in translation and compost for them is something different for us.
I know. And
I've been lied to by potting mix companies who say that you can't plant in compost.
Well, maybe theirs is natural. Yeah. Not I don't know. But they talk in this book as well.
Does anyone know about this? Anyone out there, any listeners, tell us.
About they plant directly in manure. So they're like, use manures. And I'm like, I thought you did, but you never put it around the base of the roots or close to the stem of the plant that could burn it. So I don't know. Maybe these English people have some special manures we don't know about.
Everything in New Zealand is so toxic.
So it'll be an initial 20 centimetres deep, and then in your literal planting zone, you can make it another 10 centimetres on top of that.
Yep.
So it starts to look like an actual mound, and over time each season, because it's going to compress down, you can add just to that growing zone. You don't need to add anywhere else. So it's going to keep making that mound.
Yeah.
for you to plant, your vegetables.
Yeah.
So I thought it was very interesting.
It is really interesting. Yeah.
And it's a great way of putting your resources or your like worm casts, coffee grounds, anything like that that you want to use to compost just to the limited to the specific areas rather than having to dig it over into your whole gardening row.
Yes. There is, yeah. And the maintenance is quite important on the beds as well, as well as the setting them up for the future. The way that you maintain the beds is really important as well. So obviously there's no digging, but they – a big rule. But they should be mulched once a year and then they are lightly raked over. So I saw something on our website that said no more than 3 centimetres should be disturbed when you're raking. So I guess that is the height probably of the rake. What are they called? Blades? No, prongs.
Prongs?
Yeah, prongs. That'd probably be about 3 centimetres. So I think, you know, you can put your rake in the ground to spread the mulch out, but no more. And then the weeds should be less prevalent than a traditional bed, but you will get some. You just pull them up when they're tiny little babies so they're easy to pull up so you don't have to dig them out.
Mm.
And then when you're planting something, you just form a hole exactly as big as you need, no bigger. Yeah, so there's as little disturbance in the soil as possible.
And that's where you should put your most high quality compost and mulches.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And then when plants have finished, you don't dig them up. You just chop them off at the base and you leave the roots to decompose in the soil.
Which also blew my mind.
I know, crazy.
And then they replanted literally in the decomposing plants. Like,
yeah.
Also, yeah, just blew my mind.
I know, it's crazy. If you think about it, it's the way that nature would work. Say you have a tomato plant, a tomato would drop to the ground, the seed would go on the soil right where the old tomato plant is. As that's decomposing, a new one would grow. So it does kind of make sense, I guess.
It's putting the natural cycle back.
Yeah.
Into your garden. Yeah. It's such a different contrast to a traditional.
It's almost kind of scary to start because it's just very different. But also that you should use a crop rotation system. So which makes sense.
And it's like a general rule for most vegetable gardens anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And then so after the first year, so the first year is your setup year where it's really finding its feet. And then after that, you shouldn't have to do too much to it, just that mulch once a year, probably in the autumn, I would say, when most things are finishing up. And you can, even if you are chopping off plants at the base, you can just leave them scattered about if you chop them up and use them as mulch. So it's all very kind of using what you've got and,
nothing goes to waste.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. It's the effort in the initial year is high, but after that it's so minimal.
Yeah, really minimal. And so that's pretty much no dig. And Libby, you're gonna do some no digs, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm gonna try it. I'm really inspired by it, especially if you've got the space to do it.
Yes.
I love the idea of doing the first season, yes, might be a bit harder, but I do like the idea of having minimal weeds.
Yeah.
And so once I'm set up, it's gonna be much easier to keep on top of.
Yes.
Because that's what I do struggle with. So I'm hoping it seems and much not having more to dig
over time. Yeah, not having to dig over compost and
Seems like less work. So I will definitely be able to let everyone know how I get on with it.
Yeah. Cool. And that's all, folks. Libby didn't know I was going to do that.
I 100% didn't.
I like to keep surprising you after all these years. So that's pretty much it. If anyone has done a no-dig bed, can you let us know how it went and if you had any issues and if we nailed this episode or not? Because we haven't done it before. So, you know, you can read, but there's nothing like that real world experience.
Yes. And I think you can get too technical talking about the dimensions and the depths.
Yeah. But sometimes you just got to chuck something in there and go for it.
And I did wonder how it would work out with keeping it all there. Like,
yeah, I think that's when you need to, like, keep it contained or something not permanent, something temporary.
Yes. So.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, if you've got no digs, please let us know. And that about wraps it up. We don't have any cool giveaways to announce, so soz.
You're not going to Fiji on us.
No. Today is not that day. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Until next time, friends.
Bye.
Bye.